Chairperson.
Good morning, Chairperson and members and guests. We have not, the speaker, the executive authority have not yet joined, neither have the co-chairpersons of the advisory panel. Yes, I'm not sure, they may be busy with the preparing for the plenaries that will take place. But we've not heard from them.
Okay. Let me take this opportunity, honorable members, Team PBO, the support staff and STP, let me take this opportunity to welcome you this morning. We are going to deal the core of the business today. For the first time as a committee, we are engaging as a committee with the PBO, Parliamentary Budget Office. And you are welcomed. And we all know that it's Friday. We have pressure. We have tried to split the items. Some we entertained them during the week. But we'll do everything possible to make sure that our meeting is successful. Can we start with that and check with the secretary, committee secretary, if there's a, if there are any apologies? Cindy?
Yes, Chairperson, we received two apologies from members Lakude and Gwakube, both are on sick leave.
Okay. I know also the co-chairperson is not well, but she has joined. So don't be surprised if she's not as active as she usually is in the meeting, but she's with us in the meeting. She will interject when is necessary. And thank you very much for prioritizing this committee, Honorable Mabi, co-chairperson. Can I now get a mover for the adoption of the agenda as presented before us?
I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Honorable Hadebe, we're moving, and Kaiso, Honorable Kaiso is seconding.
Yes, yes, Chair.
Okay. I think we are doing that with the flexibility that we might come across, because we are not sure if the people that we have invited, the co-chairpersons and the executive, will be joining as we go on with our meeting. But then if they are not there, we will continue with the meeting. They have not yet joined Nhlanhla. Nhlanhla, have they not joined yet?
The executive? Not yet. Not yet, Chair.
Okay, we'll skip that one. Co-chairpersons, Honorable Frolic and Honorable Nyambi, not yet.
Not yet,
they
Chair.
Okay. Our apologies on that score, Honorable Members. We have sent the letter and the for invitation and the program last month, and a reminder last Friday. We just think maybe they are held up because there are many plenaries and other things that they need to deal with, hoping that they will be joining us. I'll jump straight to Team PBO, which is led by Dr. Janjis, to make their presentation. And my apologies, Dr. Janjis and your team. I know you are very passionate with your work, but we don't have the luxury of time. Please do everything possible. I have indicated to you that we have the pressure of time. People have to travel. Some, as we speak, are at the airport. But let's do the work that is expected of us, honorable members. And Dr. Changis, over to you.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Coach Jefferson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues. Good morning, SDP. Thank you so much for the opportunity for the parliamentary parties on this to please. I also agree with the executive authority and the advisory board members. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I would like to note, Chair, that definitely we have noted the concerns of time. We did try to chunk the presentation there and there just to try to move with the speed. I'm with the team on the platform. As you may know, Chair and members, that this is an MPPS period, so not all the teams here. We're currently working on the presentation on the division of revenue and appropriations for next week. So please do accept apologies as well in that regard. And even the DP directors, Dr. Raj Mohammed, Dr. Neila Olwandi are here. Mr. Mannakot also, Alfred Mannakot is here as well. But just want to send our very heartfelt gratitude and appreciation for this opportunity. I would like to ask that my video not reflect my video, because I'm not in an usual spot. I might struggle with the network as well. I'll just continue with the presentation and I'll come back with my video during the engagement with members. Thank you so much. Alfred, you can move to the next slide. So really, the presentation was, the invitation was about the annual reports that the executive committee have tabled in the houses. But I think, as the chair is right, that since it was the first time we engaged the committee, we would love to also thank the committee with other backgrounds, some of the issues, some just really broadly. But as you say, we'll make more time for some of the more substantive issues. But I think we'll want to cover some of these variety issues, which enable us, the committee, to understand all these, understand the difficult challenges, also the success and what we are understanding that what we do, and whether also to get guidance from the community on some of the issues that are coming out over time. Next slide, Alfred. So briefly, that's why it's a bit long presentation, just to cover wide issues, given that it's the first time, and we really appreciate this opportunity. Alfred, are you there? I don't know if Alfred is hearing me. Alfred?
Yes, I can hear you. Searching.
All right. All right. Move to, I think make your presentation to be more like a full screen, so you can move here. No, okay, that's fine. I don't know if, okay. All right, that's fine. No, perfect. I think the outline, as it is, where we're not going to follow it as it is, Chair, but we'll try to move, pick up specific things that we run with that. I think the first slide, Alfred, just go to the first slide. The other one, I think, will move quite quickly there. I think what I want to start with today is really to remind the committee that this office has been established for 10 years now. I think in June, the office was making 10 years, and I hope it doesn't behave like a 10-year-old. You know, 10-year-olds have different behavior. But I think there's a lot that's been done by this office, and I'm very privileged to be part of this journey as well, and the team as well as on the platform who also really privileged to have been part of this journey. The other challenges that we've had when the office was established, to my frustration, disappointment, some of these challenges have not been addressed and are still just on the side. And they're still persistent. And our hope and wish that as time goes on, some of the obvious challenges that make it difficult for the office to support Parliament is in line with the Act will be resolved in that. Next slide, Albert. I think this slide, just to give a background in a nutshell, the office established by the Act to provide some support to implementation of the Act, but also really indicate the accountability processes of the office, and also the indication that the office has been given powers to request information and support from the site. Next slide. And this slide just emphasizes that the office gets its mandate from the Act, which is the Act of Parliament, the Money Bills Amendment Procedures Act, which was actually amended in 2019, and that's where the office gets mandate, and also ensure that it fulfills governance capabilities. Next slide, Albert. I think this slide is the only slide. What we have done in the presentation, Chair and members, we really set out a few slides that set the context, that give you a context how this office is established, what are the issues, but I also give an indication in the fact that Parliament had went through the lens of doing benchmarking exercise, looking at the landscape, looking at some of the issues. But I think at the heart of it was really to strengthen the oversight capacity, have this vehicle that can react quickly, effectively in providing this oversight. And two houses had conducted very lengthy benchmarking exercise in 2010 and 11, where they did a report to say this is how South African DBO should be contextualized within this context, but within the Act itself. And that has been also what we've been guided with over time, because of how the houses, whether the houses put intentions about this office and whether this office, it should be providing the support, but also the leadership of executive authority, which, provides guidance, and also within the parliament administration system ecosystem support, how we collaborate with other sectors within the ecosystem. So I won't go through those context slides because of time, but I just want to give an overview in this regard. Next slide, Albert. I think next slide, that's when we come to the office itself, where we remind members the Money Bills and Amendment Procedures for Legitimators Act was really put into effect in line with Section 77 of the Constitution, which says only the Minister of Finance, sorry. Sorry, Chair, can I just get water?
Which okay.
says, yes, only the Minister of Finance can propose money bills, and the Parliament or Legislature can only amend that money bill. So the very clear, distinct powers are set out by the executive and the legislature. And then the Constitution further says Parliament has to enact a law that guides it in terms of amending these money bills. And that's when this Act came into being, in line with that provision. And that Act, Section 715 of that Act, establishes office specifically for specific role that it has to play in this regard. And even though the Act was put in place in 2009, the office only came into being a few years later. Next slide, Alfred. We've also provided some very high-level view of the office, what were some of the issues that it addressed. Certainly, one of the bigger issues, I mean, as I said earlier on, we saw in previous slides, there was an initial Act, and the Act was amended later on. But clearly, the amendment of the Act that came into 2019 was as a result of the two houses passing resolutions to clarify some of the public participation processes in the Act, but also ensure Parliament has the flexibility when it deals with the Money Bills Act, and also clarify some of the terms and conditions. But I think there was clearly a section in the amendment which focused on budget office itself, clarify some of the governance issues and also accountability issues, but also provide some of the confirmation of the role of the advisory board and so many others. So that's what's really thing that terms that clarified in the amendment. I think the biggest challenge for the parliament, for the houses, for people and other ecosystem is that the Act has not really been implemented in its effect. It's not really been implemented. As I said earlier on, it's been 10 years, but the Act has not been given effect at all. It's been very appropriately given effect in certain areas. But as a result of not giving the Act into effect, officers have suffered quite a lot of difficulties in this regard, which we'll share with the committees when the time comes in. But of course, this committee might have been aware of some of these issues, which came up to the discussion in some of the other platforms. Next slide, Alfred. The Act does indeed provide, as I said earlier on, the Act does indeed provide for clear mandate of the office, what we need to do, what we are required to do in support of House of Parliament in processing money bills, but also as is part of indicating that we have not been able to give effect, not all these functions need to do, largely because of capacity. And that's for me the worrying issue, because in a way I feel that the office has not really fully given effect to its mandate. And in my view, that means Parliament has not really gotten full benefit of this office windows finished. And it's my wish that this initial engagement with this committee will really open up the opportunity for the office really to begin in effect, to be able to implement its role, and also strengthen its oversight and seen the act as it's put out in this regard. Next slide. Okay. What we do, next slide, what we do have recognized has really tried to map our understanding and how we fit into the oversight ecosystem. And we use this diagram, co-chairs and members and colleagues, that we often really break it down to explain how, understand how we fit into the role of oversight in line with the mandate of the office. And this diagram is really, you know, that always guides us and also help us to understand, but also when we speak to other stakeholders to try to break it down in a more simplistic way. So the national level, at the first block, the national level, which we show how government goes about setting out its own aspirations, economic growth, economic development, and this understanding is brought about by from various policy pursuits and constitutions which set out really clear developmental mandate. Developmental framework of the country and how the budget will be used in terms of really realizing those aspirations. At the legislative level, that's then we say, once that's set out, we clearly plot the role of Parliament in our side role, ensuring the monitoring and evaluation of the process of realizing these aspirations. And therefore, Parliament uses the Money Bills Act to really assess how the budget has been used to realize and contribute to realize the sustainability. Hello? All right.
Hello? Yeah, we can still hear you.
All right, thank you. I saw the somebody's thing. Thanks so much. And at the third level, that's how we plot ourselves in terms of how we really support this very macro process. And that's really where we see our role to provide insight to House of Parliament in terms of the progress and the use of budget in realizing the set out developmental indicators. And this how, in this way, members are empowered to decide whether to accept or reject the budget, because we provide that insight that shows whether we're making progress or what's likely to be this budget poses as implications on realizing this development. So this is a graph that we use a lot of times. Very small, but it often really captures in a bit holistic how we fit into how the office fit into the oversight ecosystem and how what role that we see as important that we play and discipline over time. Next slide, Alfred. And now, given that graph and also the mandate of the office set out clearly, I see my role as the director of the office as really. To ensure the office remains a strong voice in the budget process of oversight. Because now we have a clear mandate set out. Now, in my picking up and pitching up the vision, the way that I see this, how we see things, and I see it in that way. You know, our role is to really ensure the office remains, my role is to ensure the office remains a strong voice in the budget process and support oversight. And aiming to achieve these four fundamentals in the process, ensure that our work is really accessible to members of Parliament, understanding the context of which we have variety members in this regard. That's very important for me always to achieve. Let's make sure that members can understand our work. And the second fundamental is really ensure that even if we have a mandate for clearly spell out, we're able to also balance it out with providing additional analysis that really strengthen this oversight we're talking about. So we have a very good balance between getting these requests, this mandate, this request from members, from the committee, from offices, from the members, from the committees, but also are able to follow through to say, look, in addition to that, PBO has done this analysis, which we see will also strengthen the oversight. And thirdly, we also believe in transparency and a very clear way of workflow process. We say, this is how we do our work. And when you criticize us based on this framework, and understand we can, that's very important to also have that clearly spell out our methodology in terms of improving our work. And fourthly, what's important to me as well, again, is in this regard, is to ensure that the office remains very respected and also seen independent as it is. And it's my wish to ensure that that remains intact. It's always the time, particularly if we're going to provide such important advice, which is credible to the important house. So those really how I see the world and how I see it fitting in ways driving my vision of this office members and the chair and collective. Next slide, first. The office, what we a privilege also is the office that we act on top of setting out clear mandate, it also set out what committees we support and which committees we do. But I think what has been a very important damage for time is that even if we're very clear indicative, these are the committees that we support, the Act does make provisions that we work with other committees, but also we can work with members as well, individual members as well. But I think even the executive authority has over time expressed itself that the office should really be very useful in the wider ecosystem where you get success, where we also have to look at a sector analysis, look at education, health, and all sorts of analysis in support of our side. And that has really enabled us to work with other committees over time. Work with various committees in regard to the additions to these committees we set up to work with. But also the Act itself does provide that space in this regard. But these are our core committees we work with over time. But as I say, our work model, our methodology allows us to also work with other committees in this regard. Next slide, Alfred. So now this diagram, just to share with members some of the goodness of the analysis that we provide with time, and really which enable us to also remember why we're doing this, you know, why we do this analysis and why we do it and so on. And I think just in a very nutshell, we do a pre and post analysis during the budget time, so a very busy time, like September, October, November, very busy time of the office, January, February, March, very busy time of the office. We often really get caught up in producing a lot of analysis. We also do some of the policy analysis where we looked at the policy priorities and whether the budget is really being effective, how effective in the budget is really effective. We also provide members with the status of the economy, the development, and also some of the developments in the public finances over time. And what we've done, and we also do some of the you know, ad hoc research, which the committee will say, look, we have the committee, the government has presented fiscal policy, but give us advice on tax policy or give us advice on expenditure or underspending. So we also do make provisions for such analysis work. What we've been doing over the years since the office was established, we had deliberately decided not to really embark on a very huge modeling exercise where we model our economic growth and like, you know, in comparison with government. What we've done at the beginning of the year, we decided we'll run an audit that looking at the capacity as well of government and other entities, government entities, the bank and other entities that were doing the modeling itself, but we had decided we'll actually audit that those models, those are focused and provide parliamentary advice. So in terms of our audit of this focus, how likely are we to realize this growth over time? But over the past few years, 5 years or so, we've received a lot of requests from the committee say, given that now we've not been as a country realizing our growth focus, as you said ourselves, TBO needs to start now being more involved in this process of giving advice in terms of how, what kind of thinking, what kind of variables need to take into account in this model size. So what we have done in response to that, we started building up our own modeling capability. Modeling capability, which we are very proud of the team, has worked so hard to try to get to the stage where now we're hoping that in the next few months, we're able to start saying, actually, this proposal of budget will not get us growth that we want, or they'll get us more growth. But again, what will be the impact, social impact of these proposals, and what are some of the public finance impact proposals? In this way, we will provide Parliament with different kind of opportunity to look at different views, whether government view, national treasury, but also we provide that view and say, look, in our analysis, this will be where we are. And I would really appreciate Parliament for really supporting us in this process, and we're very confident that in a few years or so we'll provide that very direct focus in terms of how we can, and also building up in a way, providing different scenario perspectives to say, look, this is what will get us, the proposal will get us to, but now we think if we do this, we'll get us even more than what we've been proposing in terms of growth, employment, and dealing with social economic issues. So we're very hopefully looking forward to sharing this expertise that we currently strengthening with the House of Parliament. So we'll see now our categories will strengthen quite a bit beyond what we have in this regard. Next slide, so I spend more time on this. It's Rice Chair, we're very passionate about this work. Next slide, Alfred. So the next slide, really, we will run through the annual report, but also really taking the committee where the way we go about starting that, how we see our strategic planning framework informed. And really, we've spoken about it, but I just put in a diagram where to say we see the main overarching developmental policy documents of the country as a constitution set out clearly what kind of society needs to be fair, equitable, equal, and so many other things. So that's really where we often start in looking at setting our strategy, but also and reading cognizance of the mandate of office in the Act. And then we set out our business plan, take into account the Parliament's priorities for the term, and we see how those fit into how we do it. And then we set our business plan, set out clearly how we see our contribution to this oversight process. And later on, in terms of the Act, we implement this strategy and we keep on monitoring, checking ourselves. And over the time, in line with the basic framework of public finance, management framework, we do provide updates, quarterly reviews, quarterly reports, mental reports, and annual reports of how far we need to realize our objectives, our targets, and also reflect on the risks that are facing us and how this is differentiated over time. And at the heart of the GLE is why this insight on how the budget is being used to realize South African socioeconomic issues. Next slide, Albert. What also has been helpful, Chair, members and committee, and members of the committee and colleagues, is really the fact that the Act in itself has really set out clear governance and accountability framework for this office. And that's really been an opportunity in my view, this lack of engagement is one of the legs also important, missing the legs, and I'm quite happy that. So these are some of the key, oversights. An instrument for the office, as a director there, he's got an advisory board, but that's ultimately executive authority responsible for guiding and also taking, accountability for this office as well. So the next graph, I think, provides more detail. Next graph, Alfred, it provides, it captures broad office governance accountability framework, including the interactive models in terms of what is expected with each oversight structure in this regard. It's based on the provision of the Act itself and also looks out while with the Parliament of size, where it says the directors, get appointed by houses and then the director has signed the performance contract, signed with the executive authority. Once this is in place, then it set out the key responsibilities where directors then have the right to describe the right to the EA, provide the accounts, provide the strategy, provide this plan that I spoke about, set out clearly the strategy, what we need to do over the next 3 years, and what kind of budget requirements is there, and on a regular basis, we provide accounts on these measures. And on a quarterly basis, this account is provided to the advisory board, and also as a mechanism that because the Act has its requirements on some of the issues that we need to deal with the advisory board. But at the end of it, the executive authority is the one that oversights, gives leadership to this entity. Then it provides feedback on matters related to sound management of the DBO and business director. It's required to provide that. And the tables, and the executive authority also requires a table of this budget and reporting houses, which refers to them. Again, refer to this committee, oversight committee. The agency is required to consult advisory board on specific matters and further provides regular reports on quarterly basis, as I said earlier on, and then the committee advice on matters related to the structure, specifically structure and constitutional deployment of the office. The advisory board is to inform the finance and appropriations committees of when somebody has to be nominated to act as director once that's enabled to work. Then the advisory board nominate that person. And in case of director role become vacant, the finance and appropriations committee is advised to initiate the process of recruiting in a transparent and open process And once that is done, the recommend to the houses, and the houses debate and decide who will become the tax officer. So, very nutshell, and this is very useful governance oversight framework for the office, which really links up well responsibilities and who does what. I think we can discuss more later when the time comes. Next slide, Alfred. Oh, also, this slide, what we just want to show here is that where is the budget office located in the 42 budget process, which is in the under program 3, which indicate that budget the officers to be transferred funds to deliver on its mandate. And this happens annually in the context of, but that's areas where that's the area where I said earlier on we have the challenges we have since the beginning of the year where the office is not really going to transfer as required by the Act. And we only considered it really tripling apart the annual budget budget as required by the Act for the past 2 years. And we are hoping that there will be more engagement and also more guidance from this committee in terms of how we this the process will be fulfilled over time. The next slide, Alfred. This is a slide which I want to spend a lot of time. I just really try to capture the office business model here, which again coming back from the Gagos model just show in the previous slide, which clearly shows the office what positions are clearly defined groups of support and recognizing that the public forms an important part of the customary group within the product. Hence, a lot of times we publish our work, we table it, and also get to engage with various stakeholders on the work that we do, that's over and above supporting the House of Parliament. So that's really captured, and it really helps to model and think about how where the strengths and weaknesses within this model, which we can discuss later on as well. Next slide, Alfred. I hope I'm not reading too fast. I think in this slide, we're just showing the workflow. I said earlier on, we draw a balance between ensuring that we can deliver a mandate, but also more importantly, the capacity we have in this office has been so limited that we always have to manage expectations. My wish that will change soon, but it's very limited. But what we do in managing expectations to develop this model to say when basically at this moment we don't deal directly with members individually. We work with, because we are only few of us, if we work directly with members, it's very difficult to fulfill all 490 members' requests. But now what we have started to do is develop this model which really goes about recognizing the committee's requests specifically, and then the committee's request sent to the office, say, look, PDO, please advise us on whether the committee on tourism can reject the budget of the department. And that comes from the office of the chairperson of the committee. And then we'll only entertain that we write back to the committee, this is what we can do for you, and then this over time, this is how long it takes us, and so on. And this model has been in place since the beginning of the year, the beginning of the office. And as much as it's not very perfect, it's been able to help us to manage expectations, but more importantly, ensure our process is fair and transparent in people that we address to have this office. Next slide. I think on the next slide, is really going running through the annual report itself. I set out the slide about the previous slide. First of all, I set out the slides. We set out the slides which shows. Give members of the committee and colleagues and other stakeholders a bit of an overview, given that the first time we present some of the issues, some of the work that we do. But I've decided not to go through it in detail, but just ask members just look at that, see this work that we do, and please provide advice if there are any further work you want, you think could also enhance the committee in that regard, in line with the Act mandate, of course. But just really wanted to provide sense to some of the specific smaller projects we did and some of the feedback we got as well. But we skip that, we just run through to the actual numbers there. The next slide, Alfred. I think also importantly, the office has a broader pool of stakeholders to keep pace with the social issues, social media issues, outstanding issues, surface issues, over time development, strengthening the office taking section of the community. So we compare ourselves with various stakeholders, but also we have this regular engagement with various stakeholders. It's important for us to really clearly define these stakeholders. And that's been very important, but in general, the current year, we have few engagements, some of them, where we compare notes, but also where we share our perspectives in these issues. And that's been very, a very good way of really measuring the work we do, but also ensuring that the Parliament benefits from some of these global engagements of these measures. The office formed part of the African PDOs that established the network in budget offices network, and South African was elected as the chair in the current year of to chair that network for the next 3 years or so. And also we worked a lot with the OECD similar platform at the OECD level, where they take South Africa as a very important stakeholder, and they regularly invite us to share perspectives on these key important issues affecting our global economy, and they often very get proud when they attend these meetings how much South Africa is respected, but also the South African PDO also how much is respected in that. We also have regular engagements with our local stakeholders where we share notes, we see how we collaborate and in consent and oversight in this regard. Next slide. So these are some what happened during the year basically. I'm trying to balance giving a broad picture but also focus on the current year. Some of the developments that took place during the year related to governance and so many other things. The act came into effect in 2019, the amended act, and really the study alone was really to clarify, confirm some of the challenges that the office had related to governance, related to management, but also related to responsibilities and what the director can and do and what's required to do in line with the responsibility of the accounting officer. And consulting with the executive authority and advisory report, we've been able to really, when I took the role, started the role 2021, that's when, I don't remember when I started, but I know that I've been doing this for at least 3 years now. I need to remember. So I apologize for that. But when I started the role, consulted the executive authority and advisory report to say, there are clear responsibilities set out in the Act, clear requirements in terms of what office needs to do, and how it really reach its optimal as set out in the Act. But I think what we had to realize there quickly was understand that the office was in what I call it transitional state, but now in a way we could not almost immediately give the sector entire Act as it were then. And what happened then, we went into a discussion with Speaker of Parliament then to say, how we ensure, because I understand the executive authority has instructed the director of the budget office then and the secretary to ensure that the office is given effect to and can implement its mandate as it were. But as I came in late into this speech, I was to say, look, let us allow this transition to take effect. But in the meantime, for the office to function, to continue, can we have some mechanism of allowing the office to function in specific corporate functions within Parliament, administration services, in a way, in a time, in the meantime, enabling
Mr. Dr. Janchis, we are on slide 47, and the agenda here, what we expect from you is to give us a report on the annual report.
Yes.
So far you haven't.
Yes.
Can you focus on the annual report? I think so far we have captured what you are all about.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for the guidance, Chairperson. These issues are in the annual report as well that I'm discussing. I've moved away from the context. I'm really now on the annual report. But I think some of the slides have moved off. We've cut off. Definitely, these are specifically in the report as well. Move to the next slide, Alfred. The next slide specifically talks about performance information. Performance information here, the next diagram, we have two programs in the business plan set out. The one is administration, the other one talks about performance. the office assessment output indicates, based on the categories that I've mentioned earlier, on different categories, one that focuses on budget and NPH analysis, the other one focuses on just standing of output, the other one focuses on the briefs that we got telebriefs, and the other one focuses on adult research and the modeling one, and the one that talks about really international civil engagement there, and what we get out of this civil engagement. And there is the target set out for every category, 2.3, 2.5, but the output target category 2.3, 2.5, often difficult to measure or to actually determine exactly how much they'll be, given that they're largely dependent on the engagement or the response you get from the committee specific on specific requests there. We are able to achieve quantitative, we're able to achieve quantitative targets set out for the plan itself, yet we could not fully give our planned outputs. For example, we had planned to already start on with this economic modeling reports earlier on in the year, but due to some of the delays, you know, to realize that, we have received reviewed the approaches I said earlier on, I'll do it, but I wish us to say already in 2023, should have been to get that report out. It's not out yet. Hopefully we can have that report in the current financial year. We have also wished to start process on and understanding the impact of the work that we do from the committees, but due to lack of capacity, we're not able to really assess, like a very broad assessment of work, the impacts that we do in our side. We're not able to report on potential unfunded mandates as required by the legislative and policy, as required by the Act itself. So what I'm saying, Chair, even if we have to realize some of this, the quantitative impact, some of the areas will not be able to cover large capacity that we serve in. Next slide. I think the next slide just emphasizes that what you realize with the actual report, the targets were counted in numbers individually. But I think what we're supposed to show here is the output that's categorized as opposed to individually. And I think this presentation does show that, and shows that some of the particular variances performance on business output is rising through demand driven. So as I said, the 2.3 and 2.5 category often very much where the circular operations in performance demand driven, more demand driven, is often very difficult to set out the targets in a more accurate way there. The next diagram shows different quotas performances against targets. And you realize, as I said earlier at the beginning, that term 1 and term 4 are most busiest time of the office, where we provide a lot of analysis around these areas. And in my instances, many of the requests pick up from there to find that, you know, give us more indication on this, give us more advice on this, and find the team has to build on the work that we've done during that time to give more input as well. Next slide. Well, I think it really covers largely the performance section, where we set plot out how our performance has been over the year. The next slide is about the financial information. The section of this report brings the committee on the outcomes of the budget allocated. This is different from the budget request in line with the money. It really shows how much from what we've allocated, what we've been to use, and what we need to achieve. I added a slide later, which really in the presentation discussed the issues around budget requirements that have been not fulfilled and how that has impacted the office in doing this work. So this slide showed that the office was allocated, 18.4 million in the year under review, and bulk of it goes to the cost of employees, because our work is largely, knowledge driven, so we work with people involved in our accounts. We will have a more bigger cost coming from the COE. These are mainly, current payments. And I said, as I said earlier on, the biggest challenge what we really struggle with is really the challenge delays in procurement, delays in some of the other things that is really make it difficult for us to realize. Spend the money that we've budgeted for. For example, with budgets, unlike the parliamentary administration staff members, senior staff members are on a 5-year contract date, which the state assembly lab equipment is used annually, and that has not been able to conduct. We are not able to conduct this due to some of the difficulties that we experienced in this regard. And out of the mandate was allocated in that regard, I think due to I think there's one role that has not been filled, and there's also some procurement that could not take place. So we could only spend around 1.6 plus 2 billion on 2 million on that was underspent. This slide just showed the categories of spending. As I said, the bulk of our expenditures in compensation employees. Some of the expenditure related to the offices kind of current payments related to travels, related to information that we use, we pay for it, and also some of the data and so many other day to day operations, but bulk of it comes from the cost. Next slide. I think this slide does show indicatively where the budget allocated was spent, just to put in more different horizontal format there, and specifically where bulk of the expense goes from. There's the travels, there's also the data subscriptions, and the cost of employees there. The next section focuses on the human resource development section. As I mentioned, the office is really, go to the previous slides, I have some notes on the previous slides. The PBO is a knowledge-based entity. We provide members with information. We operate in a sector where chair members' skill set is limited, and we compete with various stakeholders whom many instances pay a lot more than we do in the budget office. Also, being based in the Cape Town has proved to be requires to spend more time, effort to try to recruit people from other provinces to come here, because it's quite far from the, you know, somebody coming here, leaving their families, and specifically sections, it requires us to spend more time, and we've been struggling. Many of the people who left the office in the recent years have all moved back to Gauteng, and which we also try to get people to recruit people from together. So that has been also another area, getting the staff here, getting more people in this regard. One of the issues we are doing in addressing this is that given the size of the entity and this difficulty, we will ensure our recruitment strategy allows stability in recruiting the content in particular, and how that we be able to get more people or incentivize to come and decide. We ask for advice for that. One of the decisions that we made is that the parliamentary recruitment.
My apologies, Dr. Chanchis. We are losing more members, as I indicated, and I don't know how much minutes do you need from now, looking at the volume of your slides.
Okay, all right.
You summarize.
Okay.
They've gone through your presentation. Please.
All right. Okay. What we could do then, Chair, we could go to the key challenges slides, Alfred. And then I think that covers quite a variety of issues. And then that can take us forward as well. I think, let me just put it quite lucky. The lack of, is it the first slide, Alfred? Okay, so the lack of the budget and other resources means that the office remains unable to deliver EGF on its mandate, and also, unable to do more substantive sector analysis where it's more important, or more so that over time we've seen that these are the areas that will also spend oversight. Also the issue of financial mandate is not able to report on that. And also the issues, a lot of questions around what would mean if Parliament would consider amending the budget. And that requires more capacity than that. There is a non-compliance, in my view, that we have to provide this budget is really non-compliance to the Act. Because the Act is very clear that offices will be given budget in a three-year time. The executive authority over years have requested that matter to be resolved in every agency to raise that as well. Make sufficient budget and human capacity, like a full mandate, and all that means that governance measures that are responsibility of director have also been impacted to some extent by lack of human capacity in this regard. Next slide. Also, as I mentioned, the issue of the recruitment process, it's been very impacting us as well to deal with more talent that we want in the office. And also, we feel that what we experience over time is that it takes long to takes close to 4-5 months, even longer. And for a small office like TV, it's very, very impactful that we even thought about different strategies in terms of how we can easily quickly to get while being compliant with the laws. Lack of formalized, another issue which concerns me, I think lack of really formalized budget process, particularly the appropriation of Parliament's budget, is that the appropriation to Parliament's budget really impacted us in a way. And in our community, we say that has to be prioritized with clear documented Parliament process on budget process and really appropriating budget. So, lack of this means CBO planning process, not having appropriations, Parliament, our planning process is compromised to a certain extent, and hence we're not able to, even if we requested, but we need to see it over time. How does that get smoothed in, even over the next 5 years or whatever? That will really help us in this regard. Next slide, Alfred. I think we're almost done, Chair. We've introduced this slide. Oh, this slide just to demonstrate the issues that we mentioned about lack of budget. We sent out an appearance plan. This budget that required to fulfill the mandate, and we have not been to realize, that almost more than half of it. And I think what also put me under very more pressure, even if in times where we slow spending, as Parliament is going to, we're still not able to get budget allocation in line with the Act itself. Next slide. Oh, it's a constitution slide. I think clearly in the constitution slide, Chair members, the office was established, as I said, the issues really indicate how the office was established and how it was conceptualized. And the Act provides a clear specific mandate and the governance management framework. The office was established in line with the international best practice based in both the houses, doing their own benchmarks and reporting on that. The office has set itself to and has continued to provide insight and discuss the budget impact of the society economy and what are some of the issues that can The Act also is required to receive the 3-year budget process allocation in order to give effect this mandate. And that has not happened. And I confess more how this really impacts our planning process. We can't plan for over beyond 3 years. So it's important that, in our view, this really rectified in a way over time or smooth in the system. Next slide. In 2021, as I said, when I started the role, I set out to really set up the office in transition to be able to stand its own as required by the Act, but it was not possible then, but we had agreed in a sectional agreement to, enable the office to function. It was also important to enable me to be accountable in the role that we're in, and that has been a very useful thing. So this sectional level agreement is set ourselves, Chair members, was to build on, allows to build on corporate functioning capacity over time, but also clearly set out the strategies in how to collaborate with Parliament administration, and also, again, as I said, ensure that governance reporting requirements are fulfilled over time. No. So, Alfred, this is the slide. There's the last slide left. The interim approach, which I'm referring to now, has worked with significant challenges, efficiencies that are just impacted the office. Very important. I want to emphasize this, Chair. We've had the service level agreement set out to enable the office function. It has worked. However, it has significantly and negatively impacted the office and a lot of inefficiencies that adversely impacted the office function with time. Office service delivery has been impacted, delays in procurement, denying the office to comply with the Act, and that's within the fulfillment of my governance responsibility and management, and clearly and create environments for potential interference with the function of the office and in line with the system. So this process is important, but I think if it goes forward, our views need to ensure it's more effective. In order to ensure Parliament complies with the Act, office is required to have the budget in line. I'm really concerned that FIRAS provides this budget and capacity. The office in relation to that's potential to lead interference with the act, the officers in line with the act as described. Last slide, Chair, members, you're so bad.
Conclusion slides do you have?
This is the last slide. The office
Please summarize it.
It's mandate. It's appointment. I contend that we have not completely dealt some of the requirements of the act due to lack of capacity. And also we...
overseeing the activities of the budget office, I took the liberty in this chairperson, just to make a few remarks. Suffice to say that we will be having a board meeting in the coming week, and a lot of the issues that have been raised by Dr. Jainki will be discussed there. The Act is very clear in terms of how certain things to be done, but in practical terms, it's very difficult to achieve. For instance, one of the issues at hand is that when you face a financial a situation where the financial situation in the country is of such a nature that you cannot fund to the maximum what is being requested. Everybody has a wish list in terms of what they want, but in reality, it cannot be always be agreed to. And we need also then to look at what the mandate of the office is. But these are things that we usually ventilate in the PBO, and we report directly back to the two presiding offices in terms of the work that we will be doing. So the issues raised from the side of the board, we are aware of it, it is noted, but that will be discussed in the coming week in a properly constituted board meeting. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable House Chair. I see the hand. Can I identify hands of the members to engage with the presentation, if this is what we expected, we are used to, on how PBO, like I said, it's our first meeting that we meet with PBO. Members, I see Honorable Khadebe, Honorable Singh, Honorable Khai. There's somebody in Tanzania who wanted to raise her hand and then she dropped it. Honorable Kaiso, Honorable Frolic, Honorable Masho. Okay, let me start with the Honorable...
Honorable Chairperson, my apologies. My apologies. Oh, Frolic, okay. Yes, my apologies.
Yes, sir.
I'm due to chair another meeting now at 9 o'clock of the ad hoc committee on floods and disaster relief. I will thus not be able to stay for the duration of the meeting because the minister will be giving us a briefing on behalf of cabinet on the interventions that has taken place. So I just want you to note that, please.
No, it's understandable. I did receive a note actually that you are in that meeting. Thank you. I think the meeting can excuse you, and we appreciate for your attendance and your contribution. Honorable Khadebe?
No, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, everyone on the platform. I think that first of all, we'll have to welcome this report from the PPO office and from the PPO. And then I think that it is coming at the right time, because as Honorable Frolic has just said now, and I said even in the Wednesday meeting, that the country is faced with headwinds as we are moving forward. But as we are faced with headwinds as the country, it is very important that the resources that we have, we use them effectively, actually direct the resources to which are going to have a maximum impact on transforming the country or taking the country out of the rut. I think the issue of research capacity cannot be underemphasized, because all the countries which are successful is simply because they have cutting edge research. I think that the budget office is one such office which must come handy to help parliament, so that as the SARS being squeezed, getting less and less money from the taxpayers, it means that we must try to maximize what we're going to get from SARS, that is, amplify that money we're going to get from SARS. So the implication here, Chair, is that we as a country, we're also, apart from the headwinds now that we're faced with, but there are certain structural problems which we have. One is the issue of unemployment. Two, the issue of inequality. Three, the issue of inequality. So what is important out of that, whatever we do, we must do it in such a way that we address those issues like poverty. So I'm worried that it looks like the PBO only helps those committees which are dealing with finance. But if you want to take the country out of the rut, the committees which are going to have an economic impact in the country must also be assisted. Just like the issue of the trading industry, mineral resources, agriculture, those are the areas which are job creators, which can grow the economy. So what I want to say, because they say that they only focus on these four committees, but the issue is that how many, as they said, that their mandate is very clear, that they can also help the other, the portfolio committees. How many times, because if you look at when you look at the strategic plan of parliament itself, it also has to deal with these issues I was raising, poverty, unemployment, and inequality. So with the capacity which they have, will they be able to, let's say that if we identify as the Joint Standing Committee on Financial Management, that please focus on that. And then you take another committee, just like the Committee of Health. The report which they gave us, they said that the health, yes, it is available, but the level of service is declining. A lot of people depend upon the public clinics. So how are they going to have such committees? So that when the budget are being made, we're able to direct that money towards those committees so that they are able to do their job and then enhance the work of parliament. And number three, Chair, there's also this long-standing problem which you have, that of parliament being treated as a department. Part of the problem is that we are the arm of state, which is being treated like a department. So how, with their analysis, and when they compare, I like the comparisons they made, that when you go to America, actually the Congress is able to turn back the budget of the executive, and then they are able to recraft the budget themselves. The Congress got the ability. So if the PPO is going to remain so small, are we going to reach that level that we're able to change the budget of the state, so that we're able to tell them that, hey, what is the priority here? Is one, these areas, that's what we must deal with. So, and then the last but not the least, Chair, on the issue of meeting with the advisory board, how many meetings did they have with the advisory board? Because I hear Honorable Frolic is saying that next week you're going to meet, but in the reporting year, 2022, how many meetings did you have? So that if you had, what were the outcomes of this meeting so that they can help you? Because I cannot understand that you can have so many years without having the full complement of the staff which is needed. I still maintain, even those which are not yet filled, those posts which are not yet filled, there are still very few. If we are going to make parliament to be able to challenge the executive, we need more capacity in offices like the PPO. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khadebe. Honorable Masho?
I think I was next.
Honorable Singh, you can come in.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I came in because I'm about to drive. I can't. Firstly, thank you for the presentation and the report. I can't agree more with Honorable Hateba. In fact, I was very privileged to be part of the founding of the Public Budget Office, and we had some study groups, and when the legislation was crafted. And I'm pleased to see, from it being a stepchild of Parliament, the Secretary to Parliament, it's now having some meaningful representation and, a meaningful budget, and the office is doing some work. But Honorable Hadebe is absolutely correct. When the PBO was set up, its intention, we intended that it will provide a service not only to those four committees, but other committees and to individual members. I don't know when that is ever going to happen, because in America and others, individual members get support from the Public Budget Office. But we are not getting that. And I haven't been attending all the meetings, but it's the first time I'm hearing of this advisory board. And perhaps we need to be informed, what is the role of this advisory board, appointed by whom, and, what are the, what's the mandate of this board? Because I believe the committee has a mandate to oversee the PBO. But having said that, I just want to ask the PBO whether or not they will be doing any study on the impact of the budget cuts on service delivery in the departments. Because the budget cuts are going to have serious impact on service delivery. Is that kind of study going to be done broadly over all the departments? Secondly, Honorable Hadebe also speaks about the ability of Congress to change budgets. We also have that legislated where Parliament can do that, but we haven't done that. We go to committee meetings, you'll hear about the BRRRs and budgets, and we complain, all parties, members, complain incessantly about the low budgets allocated to some of the departments, but yet we're doing nothing because we are not empowered, with research and information to suggest to the executive. And the other thing is that the time frames are very, very limited for us to make representation. So is the budget office going to make some kind of recommendations to us so that there can be meaningful interaction between a committee and the member of the executive within the limited time frames, so that we can propose amendments to budgets and things like that, because we have that power. So those are the two things that I thought I should ask. The overall ability of the office to provide a service beyond just those committees, and secondly, the impact of the budget cuts and how that would affect service delivery in departments. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Singh. Honorable Khai.
Honorable Chair, and greetings to you and the honorable members, the TP and the team. Chair, I would like to suggest that we mandate this committee, the management committee, this committee, the co-chairpersons and the whip of the committee, that you meet with the PBO and the advisory board, maybe also the issue that is raised by Honorable Singh can be clarified in that particular meeting. As well as the EAs and the FTP. But from the side of the committee, I suggest that you bring along the researcher and the content advisor. If we do have a content advisor, we don't know whether we still have the content advisor as the committee. So I want to suggest that kind of a meeting, so that these things that have to do with the implementation of the Money Bills and Related Matters Act can be addressed in that particular meeting, so that after that we have a meeting of the committee where we'll receive then a report that clarifies all these issues, because there are a lot of issues that still need to be clarified here as to whether the PDO is an independent organ, independent from Parliament, or is it an entity of Parliament that gets allocation from Parliament, or is it an independent entity that gets appropriation from the meetings of the plenaries of the two houses directly from the National Revenue Fund. So those things need to be clarified. If it's an entity, is there any shareholder compact between Parliament and the PBO? So there are some of the things that need to be clarified so that we're clear as members of this committee about the relationship between the Parliament and the PBO going forward. But mainly to discuss what are the stumbling blocks in terms of implementing the Act as it directs us in terms of the role and functions of the PBO. So I want to suggest that, because we may not have time now to do that as this committee. So that's why I want to propose that we mandate the management committee of this committee to do that on our behalf, so that we discuss all these issues of capacity that have been raised, chair, issues of governance for the PBO. Does the PBO has its own audit committee? Is it audited? Is it supposed to be audited by AG separately from the audit that is conducted for Parliament as an institution? Does it have risk committees, HR policies? Those kind of issues, we need to have an understanding around that. In the report itself, it talks about the service level agreement that was signed between the then acting secretary to Parliament and the director of PBO with regard to financial management of the PBO. We need to be clarified to how long will this agreement, the time frame for this particular agreement. Is it because some of the provision of the Money Bills Act, Money Bills and related matters that have not yet been implemented. So that's why there's this arrangement in the meantime. I think Honorable Becky has dealt with the role of PBO in terms of assisting other committees as well. But I would like to take it further, maybe in that particular meeting, to clarify, because as the other committees that are not finance committee or appropriation, we may not necessarily know how the PBO could assist us. Maybe in that kind of meeting, that could be clarified. Honorable Khadebe has indicated or the kind of committees that might be that need to be assisted, trade, agriculture, mineral resources, I would also add energy, small business, tourism. So those kind of maybe chairpersons of those committees may not necessarily know what is the role and function of PBO in terms of assisting those kind of committees. Maybe in that meeting, then that issue can be clarified, so that then in our committees of these departments that have been mentioned by Honorable Becky, we can then sort or seek assistance from the PBO, having known now what how the PBO could assist us. Maybe I should also let on the point that was raised by Honorable Singh in terms of the amendment of budget. Just want to check whether was there any time that the PBO has suggested for the amendment of budget. Secondly, Parliament decide on the budget. We would have a day where we decide on the schedule and pass the appropriation bill. What powers does the Treasury then have to tell departments to cut down on the budget that has been passed by Parliament? Shouldn't that process go back if Treasury sees that there are challenges with the finances? Shouldn't that process go back to Parliament? Parliament that has passed the budget and then appropriated to the department. Now, during the financial year, Treasury comes in and decide to cut, to instruct the department to cut their budgets. Is that legal? So that's what I would like to find out. But maybe the last point would be on the, but also maybe that could be part of the issue that we will be discussing with the PBO, the EAs, SCP, in that kind of a meeting. What sort of also training, maybe before, after the budget has been tabled for committees, so that as they interact with the APPs and budget of Parliament, they would have been skilled with regard to those issues. Thank you very much, and sorry for taking long, Chair.
It's fine. Honorable Kaiso?
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think I want to make this proposal. I know it's the first time we're having a meeting with this office, and we appreciate the report that they have given to us, a quite elaborate report. But what I want to also suggest it in future, Chair, the type of slides that have been presented sometimes, because the purpose of giving us a report, it helps us also to read on what the report is saying. We have even taken a view in the Appropriations Committee that we definitely recommend department must come up with not more than 15 slides. So, but I can imagine we're almost at 70. So maybe in future, as we move on with the TBO, we only need 15 pages, and the rest we shall try to read on our own. So, Chair, let me also echo on my and support inputs made by my colleagues, the Honorable Bekel and Honorable Khai. But I just want to also get to this point that the reference has been made with regard to, you know, interference by, as said by the PBO, even though there wasn't much budging on that aspect. But I just want to know, is there any gap, legislation gap that perhaps the PBO has identified in as far as dealing the issue that is undue influence that has been mentioned in the report. So other areas, the issues of research, I think they've been covered there, where there will be some interactions with that particular package proposal that we have made. But also I want to check what then, because I think let me stop short there, Honorable Chair. I'll come back if there's sufficient time. But I also want to check and acknowledge, you know, the good, well, the The PBO has made some strides in as far as making achievements, but then these achievements, 28 out of 36, is quite positive. But then because there is a gap now in as far as, you know, expanding the work of PBO to cover in a way some departments because of their presentation of the reports, like Honorable Singh has said in the BDR reports, but then and the measurement of the achievement of national development plan, you know, targets, you know, department by department, not only focus on finances. It would help a lot. But this can only be enhanced if the PBO's office has sufficient, you know, capacity to make, you know, economic research, because there's a stop short, there's a short reporting when it comes to issues, how their projections, you know, they make analysis, economic analysis has been done, it would be achieved so easily without really necessary capacity. I don't foresee that. So that needs to be looked at as the PBO tries to, you know, broaden its capacity. So it's definitely required moving forward to the seventh, you know, Democratic Parliament. So, yeah. So now, the lack of the evaluation of the impact of legislation is very important. That there must be a frequent evaluation of the impact of legislation itself, you know, in line with, you know, all the decisions of the parliament, especially with regard to, like I'm saying, the national development plan, you know, all the strategies plan that have been put forward. So they need to be measured quite relevantly with regard to, you know, the work of the PBO. But in the absence of that capacity, that we do not see, because I really find it very difficult how the PBO office then extend this work without having, you know, increase its capacity. It's very clear that there's a lot of capacity that is needed from the side of the city. So let me stop there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Masa.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the members of Parliament and also the officials of Parliament. Chair, firstly, I would like to apologize for being cut off in and out. I'm driving to the airport for 11 o'clock flight. But most of the things that I wanted to raise, Chair, is to apologize for the inconvenience of being cut off by network. But I'm here. I'll make sure that I'm here. And lastly, I wanted to say that some of the points that I wanted to raise, as members, the latter speakers that spoke, they covered me, Chairperson, in some of the most important things that I wanted to raise. Presently, I'm covered, but I'm here, Chair, and please pardon me if I can go being cut off, but I'll always make sure that I reconnect, because I know there is a need for a quorum in this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masho. Honorable members, one appreciates your engagement. Can you switch off your video, Honorable Masho? Let one appreciate your engagement. But there has always been a question out there as to if we say PBO, even amongst ourselves as the committee, as this committee, if we say PBO is independent, what are we referring to? PBO is independent from who? From what? What does that mean? Because that's a big statement. But also, in terms of the impact, a good presentation, Team PBO, but you have not indicated maybe the method of presentation or accounting is not as we are used to, because it's our first time doing oversight on your good soul. Usually you'll make presentation on your research and recommend and advise us. But maybe one is also was also looking forward to see the impact of the work that you're doing, because one has been working with this office for quite some time, and we know the good work that you're doing. But as and when you present, you need to indicate the impact and the outcome of the work, not just give us the statistic as to this is what you have targeted, this is what you have achieved, but as an achievement. But a good question by, I don't know if it's Honorable Khai or Honorable Hadebe, who is auditing you, because you are independent from Parliament. We know Parliament has an audit committee, is audited by the AG as well, as an independent body as well. But those are the things I think that needs to be engaged on, for us to be clarified, to be able to know as and when we speak to you. Some members have gone out already. I have indicated, some are going, they are at the airport. Some are committed somewhere. Myself and Honorable Moletsani are double booked. He was here. He's now going to attend to the other meeting of joint finance committees. I'm still here. But then I want to give the Secretary to Parliament an opportunity to say something.
Thank you very much, Chair.
I'm not saying he's, don't get me wrong, honorable members, I'm not saying he's taking over the responsibilities of the executive committee, but as the accounting officer, can I give him an opportunity? STP?
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson. Once more, good morning to all honorable members. I think the points raised by Honorable Khai are worth pursuing to make sure that the office is clarified, and it also assisted to make sure that the governance interfaces between Parliament as the parent body are very clearly spelled out. And those areas, as indicated now, they do require some tightening, and perhaps at the time of conceptualization in the Money Bills Amendment Act, they were not worked out very clearly to support the office to make sure that it's properly capacitated, and secondly, is given clear lines of accountability. So those will be the areas that maybe through that suggestion of Honorable Khai, through the oversight board, as well as the executive authority, we can find ways of assisting the office, and that will be predated by my engagement perhaps with the director of the office to make sure that there is firm proposals that are legally sound that responds to corporate governance. It will then give possible how to help the office to do its work, and secondly, how it should derive its mandate from the macro strategic framework of Parliament that will now be the framer of programs of Parliament in the 7th Parliament next year. So I would like to indicate that I would make time to have a conversation so that as management of Parliament, we're able to reinforce the support to the office and also clarify the governance accountability instruments for the offices. Thanks.
Thank you very much, STP. I think we are finding each other and finding a way forward in terms of clarifying ourselves so that we do things according to the book and our understanding, and we help each other. Over to you, PBO, please, in response to these issues, consider the suggestions by honorable members. And I think it's supported by most of the members in this committee, that will have to take further engagements on behalf of this committee as the management committee. Over to you, Dr. Changes.
Thank you so much, Co-Chairperson, and thank you so much to all our members, colleagues, for the input for sector plans as well. Look, I think this is an important meeting for us, first meeting, and I think for myself it gave me an opportunity to understand the committee and also understand how what are requirements, you know, getting clearly guidance from the committee, what information requests and so on. I think the dilemma we had was that we had asked for these meetings long ago with the committee, so there's so much information we thought we should share with you at the onset. But we really appreciate this guidance, very, very helpful. And I think also we also, as I say, understanding how this committee works. I definitely agree, Chair, some of the issues longstanding and that management meeting would be very useful in my view. And clarify, I think it's a lot clarity in my view, because my understanding, there are very clear governance and reporting frameworks in the Act. It's just, like I say, there's been a lot of transitions, a lot of perspectives, a lot of views around it. And I feel that meeting would be very, very useful to really clarify. But I think also, coming back to the core function, we had already long ago, but intentions of doing sectoral analysis, even if you look at the slide I'm just going to share one slide quickly, which just shows that one of the major considerations is also to listen I'm just going to quickly put this slide on. Yes, this slide. We have gotten a lot of feedback from the EA, a lot of feedback from the committees, to really focus and look at the far end of the slide. We just saw that a lot of sector analysis there. We had really prioritized it to look at education, health, economic development, learning, and all those sectors we have in our taking that into our consideration, and also strategies. We do those analysis anyway at the macro, at high level, at the appropriations committee level, at the appropriations level. Because when you look at education allocation, not only look at education, you also look at where does this, what is the outcome? How far is the education outcomes being realized? And what are some of the issues in the sector itself? But I think what I'm trying to emphasize here, Chair members, we've not been able to do very substantive finance in the sector and going directly with the committees. And it's our wish we can spend this more time, which anyway is outlined our strategies going forward. We will invest a lot of energy and force to try to work on, and then we pick it up in our strategy and in our business structure for sharing. But it's in the presentation. So it was expression of the EA even for that joint to say the office should support the sector quite broadly, not focus a lot on finance, because in any case, our understanding is the budget, government budget, yes, it's not, and it requires the 16 of us. And we do that in our policy, NDP policy work, where we do the analysis. I think what is lacking a lot, I would say, is direct engagement with these sectoral committees. And I think what has happened over time, our work model, is really to bring to let our committees understand their work model. And our work model, we certainly recognize that committees other communities can invite us, and we have put ourselves there, other communities can invite us, and we have seen many communities inviting input from us and giving presentation before. We have done that. And I think the issue here, Chair, is that it's always a capacity issue. Sometimes communities invite us at a certain time when we are not able to be there immediately, so we are not able to give immediate response because of the very limited capacity. And I still emphasize, it's our wish, it's our strategy to look at sector analysis, understanding that government budget is not about, it's not a means itself, but it's an end to a means. And that's why we look at our strategy, we look at how the budget impacts these social issues or developmental indicators, as we said. So I think many of the governance issues, I mean, I said in my slides, Chair, that my view is that the bulk of not of the issues that fit challenge my view is lack of implementing the act. In my view, it's too late to say it's a problem with the act because it has not been implemented. And if there aren't any if we say that from the act, at least from 1615, my view is that it has not been implemented. So it's very premature to say the challenge with the act itself. And that's the emphasis I made to say the act has not been implemented. So it's very premature. I agree there has to be clarification on the issue. But to say there's a problem with the act, I need to be shown that problem, except that it has not been implemented. The issues around the big issues around capacity, of course, that we want to work on, we get guidance. The issues on, I feel like I've missed out kind of thing. Oh, the issue of service-level agreement. The issue around the office having service-level agreement. But before I get to the service-level agreement, maybe I should just try to contextualize how I understand this thing. When I would like using the department's government department as an example. For example, let's say you take let's take National Treasury, because that department I work with. National Treasury has various entities under it. They've got accounting standard board, they've got SARS, they've got so many entities that work under it. But now these entities have a clear specific mandate that it is set out for. And in many instances, they've got a specific act that it says those entities are. It doesn't mean these entities are not part of the Ministry of Finance. No, it just means that in functions, they've got a specific responsibility that a country standard board, for example, it has its own accounting authority, its own responsibility, which it accounts to the executive authority. And it has clear indicative what it's supposed to do, advice on the accounting standard board, and so many other things. And that's oversight mechanism is very clearly spelled out where the Secretary of Commerce, the Minister of Finance, would have to oversight of that, or the actual kind of Minister of Executive Authority. So I'm using this example just to provide a very simplistic understanding of how I understood this entity of Parliament. PBO is an entity of Parliament. It's not independent to the Parliament ecosystem. PBO is part of, is established by Parliament, by Act of Parliament to support Parliament. And in their way, there's no way this can be seen as an outside parliament. The issue is that it has a very specific role that purposes does, which is linked to the Money Matters Act, similar to other entities of parliament, which are other entities of other departments, which is, accounts and executive, but also accounts parliament, even if the accounts are separate. So that's a framework I often, give you a very simplistic for stakeholders to understand how does the PBO function and what it means. And of course, the issue of not giving budget, it disables office for money, for pursuing its mandate. And that's what I say, that the discussion in other areas is whether that really makes it difficult, or does that be seen, can that be seen as the office itself being denied for fulfillment or interfering with its achieving its mandate in a political conversation that's done. But lack of capacity itself, I said earlier in the presentation, I'm worried about the fact that there's so much capacity that is required. Because, Chair and members, I see accountability as a two process. Accountability, in my view, it's not a one-way process. It's a two-way process whereby when the committee gives, when the act gives a mandate, Parliament gives me a mandate, I expect Parliament to also give me resources to this mandate. But if without leaving the zone, the accountability becomes more difficult that way. So, you know, so much expected for us to do, but there isn't capacity to do that. You can only do so much within the company that we have. So in terms of, you know, crafting that in delivering so much expectation, it really, you know, for me, is more difficult in the context that so. As much as the company itself, I think it's a two-way, and both sides, it's been very difficult to enable me as a director to really function in a way that it's required to implement this office. The issues around, I think many of the issues, or the way I respond on us is, what we have done, Chair and members, one of the reasons why we had a service delivery overview slide was really to deal with the issues of the work that we do. And one of the work that we do, Chair and members, is around looking at the budget itself. We looked at the budget cuts in the presentation we had on Tuesday. We had looked at the budget cuts and expressed concerns of the implications of the budget cuts in the socioeconomic issues and the economic growth itself, and we continue to raise that. And the issue that we can have a separate session where we discuss this with the committees, even the sector itself. We look at education, we look at health, we look at what are some of the implications for these cuts. For example, that it shows us a decline, we will have more decline at the other time on spending on education. With outcomes, education outcomes being the way they are, it's not it's an ideal circumstance where you want to cut spending, rather you want to increase spending and in that regard. So that's really in a way that we do provide that insight information, and the view of every slide was trying to really capture that in that regard. There was one point around, I think I've captured, I'll ask my team to respond to one of my management, I think they're here on the platform, to respond to the points, Chair, with your permission, and then I'll come back in later just to give some of the points that I think I might miss here. Dr. Olandi, Dr. Mohammed, do you want to comment on any other issue?
Nothing from my side.
All right.
Well, nothing from my side as well, thank you.
All right, no, thanks so much, colleagues. So Chair, there were points that I wrote them down here, but I think in overall, I believe I agree with Honorable Chair and Honorable Khai and our members to say the committee must have that management team. We discuss some of these more governance issues. The methods around you know, the purpose of the SLA, I think I jumped out of that quickly, was really a recognition that this office has been established and it has not been given capacity, yet I was appointed to actually deliver all its mandate. Now, I had to come up with a mechanism to enable to function, yet being accountable. And the SLA was set up in a way that it enables me to function, say, even if the office is set out as a just entity of parliament, there's no point in setting up a big corporate infrastructure within this office because it's a setup for the core functions. However, ideally it was that when we set up this SLA, it enables us to co-share the corporate functions with the parliament administration, yet accountability on the chief of the office still be lying with the director of the office. That's the first thing, to enable to have procurement taking place, have activities, things, giving appointed salaries paid, and so on, meaning only relying on the infrastructure of parliament. But one of the curses there was to say the office, which also was a point raised by the AG in all the years, before we come to that, to say whether the office is required to build to capacity on some of the obvious accountability mechanisms. And having that SLA in place was an agreement that is a transition that allows the office to build capacity in some of those obvious oversight where the directors are required to respond or to account on those specifically. But I say in this presentation that has not taken place, because what has been is that the service agreement was seen as a way to keep office to function as a division of parliament, which it didn't help much, because the way the activities have happened is that the team often get treated in a different way in the system, you know. So as I said, it was ineffective. It's been a good setup, system set up in place, But there is no instructive in place because there's not able to set up the we did what the act requires to do, to set up clearly how government will do and set up clearly policies, drafted policies in line with the act, which of course these policies are not explicitly different from parliament administration, but at the end of the day, whoever comes to direct will be required by the act to have those measures in place. And those things are in place. But I think the bulk of it is that there has been considered effort to ensure that there is resources to get this into effect. And that's why my view is that even if this happens, it is continues to escalate, there's been very, very clear oversight over it and how we wanted to ensure that the office is being saved. Because my view, as much as I understand the team was working hard from different departments in the Parliament Administration, we have largely been compromised. I mean, one of the large aspects of underspending, it's largely been compromised by the system to say, no, you pay people who are not going to prioritize. Or the system itself, maybe it's not people, the system itself, not getting much, able to be effective. And that's why even I said in my presentation, even the recruitment process itself, it's not effective for a small entity like PBO because it just takes long. We have 12. If two people have to be appointed in 6 months, we're not going to be able to do much. It takes a lot of energy to get there as opposed to when you have a more effective, more legally sound system. So that has been put in place. So set up policies, set up this mechanism is an issue of giving effect to those matters. And that's why I'm saying I really wish and I appreciate that this proposed management meeting will, in my view, take us to the next stage in getting the office get effected in how it is set up. And regular engagement with the chairpersons of different committees is important to us. And because we are able to understand what are the key areas, the thematic areas, key areas of concern, that's important for us to know. So it's important to be part of these conversations. And any chairperson of the committee can write to people, request any previous analysis, any person, any members, any person. That has been the case. And I want to emphasize that it's in place, not like we're not participating or we're not involved in the process of supporting all the committees. It's just an issue of capacity, as I say, of ensuring that there's proper capacity in this regard. And the last point, before I leave, I think one of the worries I have about this difficulties or this delays in giving effect is the impact it had on the staff of the PBO. I think I had a meeting with the Secretary of Parliament last year, and I said to him, one of my concerns is the fear to understand the moral impact of these difficulties in the team. It's so difficult for the team to really get motivated if we have so much standing issues that we raise over time and then not getting dealt with. So my wish is that this management meeting will really take us to the next stage where some of these 10 years of standing issues are resolved once and for all. And at least I'm saying this and hoping that my team can hear that I've raised these issues and we are concerned about the morale of the team with regards to making sure that we can deliver on our mandate. So, Chair, I want to really stop there and really thank you so much once more and members for the opportunity and really wish, looking forward for this management meeting. And we can provide any inputs and response in writing where we've missed some of the questions. And I really appreciate that members have to go, but I really, again, can't express myself enough how much I really appreciate this opportunity in this regard. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Janchis. I think Dr. Sarej Mohammed and Nelia and all members of your team, you must be happy that it's a good start. It's our first meeting. I think going forward, we will assist each other to do better and prepare for handover. This is one of the milestones that will be reflected in our legacy report as we hand over to the next parliament. Thank you. Thank you so much. We are now going to release you and the parliament team. Only members and the support staff can remain. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. Honorable Singh, they are gone.
Yeah, I know. No, Honourable Chairperson, I just wanted to indicate that I'm going into the mini plenary now. I'm speaking there at 10 o'clock. So I'll have to excuse myself from this meeting.
Yeah, that's what I want us to deal with, the housekeeping matters. Honourable Muletsane has gone to finance meeting, the joint finance meeting. I excuse myself from that important meeting to come and share this one. Cindy, can you help us? From NCOP, it's only myself and Honourable Khai. Can you please help us if we can deal with the minutes and the report?
Yes, Chair. The rules require that at the time that the matter is considered, a matter that is to be adopted, that there be a quorum. So because we only have two members left on the NCOP side at the moment, we're not correct because we need three members on that side. On the NA component, we need five. So we are still fine in the NA component. The committee can perhaps consider that we have a short dedicated meeting for the minutes and the reports that we have at the moment when it's convened.
So you're saying in the NA, we have the five that is required?
We have the five that is required, but on the NCOP side, for the committee to be correct, we need eight members at least, and they must be five from the NA side and three on the NCOP side.
Oh, team is not here. Honorable members, that is the status. We are not courageous. We have to look into another time for us to adopt the minutes and the report because it's not fruitful for us to come to meetings, take decisions or resolutions or recommendations and not adopt so that we can present to the House. Honorable Khai, please come in.
I just wanted to check from the...
Before you come in, Honorable Singh, is your hand up or is it a legacy hand?
Sorry, the legacy hand. I'll put it down. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Honorable Khai, over to you.
Yeah, Chair, I just wanted to check the plenary session of the NA on Tuesday. What time is it taking place? Because when I check in on the program of the NCOP, there's no plenary session in the afternoon on Tuesday. So I was just thinking maybe if we could have at lunchtime, if they have their plenary session at 3, then perhaps we might be done by that time.
Chair?
Yes, Honorable Khadebe.
Chair, what can actually work is to have it after the sitting, because the plenary is at 2. It's at 2 o'clock. If you can apply quickly so that in the evening, let's say around 7, we sit, I think we can be correct then.
Yeah. Evening meetings are too many. Are too many because I'm doubting if all of us will be available and find a slot. We might find a slot in the evening, but some of us we are busy with these processes that we're doing, and we need to have study groups.
Chair, what you can do then? Just defer them to the next meeting.
So let's try everything possible. What we are agreeing on is that we are unable to continue with these items. These outstanding items today, and then we'll find a time. If we agree, I'll talk to the co-chairperson and the whip and consult with the secretary to or request the secretary to do applications, check the commitments of other members, see what we can do, because I think members have received minutes, have received reports. I don't think we'll take much time really for the evening. We can as well do it at lunchtime. It's fine. Let's talk outside this meeting. We are agreeing that we cannot continue because we don't form a quorum. Honorable members and colleagues, thank you very much for availing yourself. I know some of you were double parked. You were doing multitasking, and I want to appreciate your commitment. Thank you so much. And for those who are not well, including myself, good health may be upon you. Please recover speedily. We need you. We need you back at 100% healthy. Thank you so much, honorable members, and enjoy your weekend.
Same to you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.